Good afternoon. It's 12:07. You're tuned to Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Monday, June 10th. With me sitting in for Bob Kaler this week, an old friend of the program, Dan Stockman from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Dan, how are you today?
I'm good. Good. Despite the weather.
Despite it's a little bit dreary outside today. That's okay. On today's program, we're going to be checking in on agriculture in our region, and we want to hear your questions and comments. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. With me in studio to help us sort all of this out, Kevin Ousley, president of the Whitley County Farm Bureau. Kevin, appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Also in studio, John Metzger, president of the Noble County Farm Bureau. And John, we appreciate you taking time out for us today.
Well, I appreciate the invite.
And with us by phone, he's been on our airwaves before, Chris Hurt, an agricultural economist at Purdue University. Professor, we appreciate you taking time out today as well.
Well, it's always a pleasure.
I want to start actually just by asking you, Kevin and John, a little bit about what you do, presidents of your respective farm bureaus, of course. But Kevin, maybe let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your operation.
I have a small farm down by State Road 9 and 14. We do mostly livestock, feeder calves, hogs, chickens, turkeys, and hay and straw.
And John, tell us a little bit about your operation as well.
My family and I, we run a dairy farm in Noble County near the little town Wolf Lake.
And I'll ask you both, and maybe John, we'll start with you. How's the year going so far?
Oh, it's not going too bad. We've got some good-looking crops, and we've got some crops that don't look so good. They're a little tough and a little flooded, but... Mm.
Which are looking good and bad?
The corn crops are looking pretty good. I mean... our hay crop, we were fortunate, got our hay off before the rains came, and some of my neighbors struggling a little bit there. We just, a little luck of God, we got it off before the rain came. So,
Kevin, how about you? What's the view from your place in Whitley County?
I'd say corn and soybeans are looking pretty good, the ones that didn't get flooded out last week. Mm-hmm. And then the hay, I was one of John's neighbors that didn't get mine in as soon as he did. So we're still working on our hay crop, and that's pretty much for Whitley County.
The rains had last week had a big effect on your crops?
Delayed it.
Delayed them?
Delayed the hay for another week or two. Before we're going to be able to get in there and get them cut and get them baled.
Now, does that mean increased feed cost in the meantime, or it just messes up your schedule type of thing?
Well, I was running pretty short on hay anyway, okay. So I had to do what I could. We put some down just and gathered it up, baled it wet, just to feed the cattle.
Now, does when you delay like that, does that reduce the number of cuttings you get? In a season as well?
Yes.
So that's actual monetary cost to you if you're getting fewer cuttings then.
Yes.
Okay.
And the feed value will be lower in this hay that's cut late. I mean, as it matures, it'll be a little bit lower.
Okay.
Chris Hurt, I want to go to you. I haven't seen the very latest USDA report, but I understand that most folks around the state of Indiana, anyway, we were actually kind of ahead of the curve in terms of folks getting their corn and soybeans into the ground.
Well, that's actually right. And I guess if there's a more blessed area in the state of Indiana, it is the northern part of Indiana. As of a week ago, 99% of the corn was reported to have been planted by USDA, and 89% of the soybeans. And again, I think we had some open weather this last week, so when we see that report this afternoon, we think pretty well done in terms of both the corn already finished as well as then finishing up on the soybeans. The area of the state that's the furthest behind is down in the southern part of the state. They only had 40% of their beans planted a week ago, 81% of the corn, and they did have a little more rain early in the week. So we think they're planting delays there. And then if we look more broadly across the country, because prices for Indiana farmers and northern Indiana farmers will be established by the national production, we do see some pretty serious delays in even getting this corn in the ground in Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Western Illinois. So that could end up actually helping prices for our Indiana farmers. We'll just have to see how the rest of the growing season goes.
It's the old thing of we want, not that you want anyone hurt, but you want terrible conditions everywhere but here, right? Because it raises prices.
From the perspective of local farmers.
Again, you don't want anyone to do badly, obviously, but you've got that national price that affects what you're doing locally, regardless of what your local conditions are.
Well, that depends on what side of the coin you are. If you're like me and you're a dairy farmer, we're a consumer of this. So we're hoping for a great crop to bring the prices down, especially if you're one that buys all your crops.
That's right. Okay.
I want to put this to all of you, and Professor, maybe we'll start with you. I mean, you touched on it there just now, but can you talk just a little bit more about how important, I mean, staying on schedule, staying on time is for farmers in the state across the Corn Belt, really? I mean, is there such a thing as too late?
Well, there clearly is, and I think we all know that we live in a climate where we're only given so much heat and so many days of growing potential. And when you think on corn, we'd really like to be planting corn someplace, at least starting in late April. And now here we are on into June. Of all of the days, all of the sunshine, all of the opportunity for plant growth that would have been lost if crops had not been able to be planted. So at this point, we're really pushing up to the limit in terms of corn planting. And again, we're going to hear more of just simply not planting crops, I think, in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and parts of Iowa. And if they have crop insurance, they'll have an opportunity to just take their crop insurance. So we're starting to hear more of that decision made. Soybean, we'd like to have corn in northern Indiana planted by, you can talk to the fellas there, but, the middle of May, 20th of May, and we're well beyond that date. But you're done in northern Indiana. And on soybeans, a couple weeks later, if we can get those in by late in May, probably as we get to June, we start to expect some yield decreases. So just losing a good bit of the growing season, it is very critical. And, of course, we've been extremely short on basic food ingredients like these crops. So that's why I think everybody is hopeful we could get a reasonable crop. But we do have some problems, particularly in other parts of the country.
That shortage and hence the higher prices that we've been seeing on the marketplace the last few years.
Yeah, well, that's right. And, with the drought that we had last year, very severe in Indiana, really, Indiana was the center of the drought as it started early, then it migrated further to the west. But very severe reductions across the country in terms of especially corn. And corn is very foundation for a lot of our basic foods as it goes into livestock feed and other kinds of food products that we eat as consumers. So that's where we remain extremely tight. World inventories are extremely tight. And so we really hope we can get a reasonable crop here in 2013. And that if we can get that reasonable crop, right at this point, it doesn't look like it will have a chance of being a record crop because of the delays we've had, especially outside of northern Indiana. But still, a crop that can help lower some of these prices, and particularly lower prices for feed ingredients, as we've already heard about, but also lower basic commodity prices that are the foundation, the start of our food system. What that will mean is we maybe will have a chance to moderate the food inflation we have been seeing somewhat even later this summer and moving on into 2014. So fingers crossed, we still have a reasonable chance at a fairly decent crops this year.
Kevin Ousley, I saw you shaking your head a bit when Chris mentioned we may not see a record crop this year. It looks like that gels with your experience so far.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. With Iowa and Illinois being behind, that's where a lot of the U.S. corn production does come from. They tend to have higher yields than what Indiana does. But I would agree with that. If, without their early planting, it's going to be hard to have a record crop.
We're talking agriculture on this edition of Midday Matters, and we hope to hear from you this hour. If you have a question or comment for our panelists, call us 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. John Metzger, we have to go to a break in a few minutes here, but I want to ask you, is this year, compared to, say, the last few, better, worse, the same? I know 2 years ago we had a lot of folks had a very soggy start to the season. Last year, of course, we had that awful drought here and across the country. Can you reflect a little bit on how this year compares to the last two or three?
Well, of course, the drought last year was severe. It got worse as it went on. We were talking earlier, I don't know what you'd consider normal. We laugh about that in the ag industry. We all kind of knew that, you know, nature will even itself up. So we were all hoping we wouldn't have two droughts in a row. It was a little dry there for a little bit, but now I would say this is Indiana normal weather. We're going to be varying from year to year. Mm-hmm. It's just you take what you get the cards you get and you play them. So I think, like Kevin said, for here we're probably going to have close to a normal yield, but I don't. There's no way a record yield is going to be set for the nation. So
we're going to take just a quick break here. In the meantime, we do hope you'll get in touch with us one more time. 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm or get in touch with us via social media. Stay with us. Back in 2 minutes.
Enjoy great wines and a gourmet 7-course meal at the second annual Picked by the Pros Wine Dinner, Friday, June 21st at the Bergstaff Place, presented by O'Daniel Audi Porsche. Tickets are $125 per person or $800 for a table of 8. Purchase online at nipr.fm or call WBOI at 452-1189.
Talk of the Nation provides you with the day's news and more, the experiences and opinions of people around the country and around the world. I'm Neil Conan. When you're looking for the latest news and how it affects you, your family, your neighbors, and your life, turn to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
For this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, announcing this year's Top Campaign Committee Award recipient, GM FWA Truck Assembly Plant UAW Local 2209. That's what it means to live united. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
It's Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter along with Dan Stockman from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and we're talking agriculture on this hour of the program. With us in studio, Kevin Ousley, president of the Whitley County Farm Bureau, John Metzger, president of the Noble County Farm Bureau, and with us by phone, it's Chris Hurt, agricultural economist at Purdue University. We hope that you'll give us a call this hour. That's 800-471-9264. can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. I know we have a call to get to in just a few moments here, but Dan Stockman, I know you had a burning question that we were chatting a bit about over the break.
Well, these guys are doing all the burning, apparently. One of the things I was surprised to learn was that a huge component of fertilizer prices is petroleum. And as those costs rise, fertilizer goes up, raising your cost. But then there's also, of course, the thousands of gallons of fuel that you're burning in equipment. How directly, how big are these energy costs affecting your operations? What kind of, are we talking about the difference between a profitable year and an unprofitable year, or it's just one more factor among many? I see $4 a gallon gas, and that freaks me out. But you've got a lot more energy prices, actually, to be concerned about.
Kevin Ousley, let's start with you.
I would say that the petroleum price affects at least 40% of your bottom line, and with the higher prices, it would make the difference between a profitable year and a non-profitable year, because the energy prices, it not only affects the price of fertilizer, it affects your fuel cost, it affects your transportation cost of each product that you're getting in, whether it's supplies or seed or anything along the lines, and also each supplier that's providing input into your farm, they have to pass along their fuel prices to you, because you're the bottom line. Mm-hmm. You're the last one on the line to buy from them.
It all rolls downhill, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So it easily affects the bottom line.
John Metzger, these things, as Dan alluded to, they add up. It's not just the price of, say, transporting the final product. There's farm equipment. You mentioned irrigators over the break. It's thousands of gallons of fuel, and multiplied by very expensive pricing these days.
Well, I think Kevin covered it pretty well. Just like for us, for the livestock industry with our dairy, we have a lot of things brought in, not only the feed we raise, but everything went up in price, from any of your commodities, to your steel, to your equipment, to your tillage, to your knives for a chopper. Everything has just escalated so high. That's the main thing with your...
Oh, and Chris, you could probably speak to this. Those rising costs have the broader effect on the economy. Slower economy means fewer purchases, which it's kind of that double cycle coming back around to bite these guys.
Well, there's just no question that we do see record high cost of production at this point, and those have escalated sharply in the last 5 or 6 years. Just looking back over some data, in 2005, we estimated the cost to put out a corn crop at $415 an acre. Now it's more than double that in 2013 at about $840. So more than doubling of cost between 2006 and 2013 for putting, that was a corn crop. We'd see, fairly similar kind of things in terms of the soybeans. What you have today is you have a very capital-intensive, a money-hungry industry. Farmers have the most invested they have ever had invested in a crop or in livestock. And I think the other side of that is say they have the most to lose. And we're really in a situation where many farm families could lose virtually everything that they have built up over multiple generations in terms of financial ability if they should have a total disaster in any year. So a lot of risk, and it puts a lot of pressure, a lot of concern, a lot of worry on the farm families.
You mentioned the $840 cost. Is there kind of an average number for a return on that same acre? What kind of percentage are we looking at?
Sure. Well, it certainly varies from year to year. And last year, with the tremendous drought that we had, we also saw crop insurance have very large payments in Indiana, and this, of course, varied from region of Indiana and certainly from farm to farm. But crop insurance was extremely important. As a general statement, we have seen crop prices very high, and this has given positive returns for crop farmers, really pretty much dating back to 2006. And what has been probably the greatest difficulty has been the animal sector. And we heard that reference to the dairy, how difficult that has been. But the very high feed prices really haven't, the animal producers haven't gotten enough compensation yet. So those margins have been very narrow. And again, we have kind of a sense that margins for crop farmers probably will narrow in coming years as well, but generally been good margins. And of course, that relates to some higher land values and higher cash rents as well.
We do want to hear from our listeners today. If you have a question or a comment for the folks on our panel today, call us 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Looks like we have a caller on the line here. Let's open the phones and go to Steve. Steve, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Good afternoon.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Okay. My question is, you mentioned that in Iowa and Illinois and Indiana are big corn-producing states. Could you tell us what would be the number four big corn-producing state?
Chris Hurt, maybe we'll put that to you.
Okay. Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, Indiana, South Dakota. Those are the top six. I may have one of them in a wrong position, but those are the top six.
Okay. Steve, well, thank you very much.
Steve, you're welcome.
This is Steve. We appreciate the call. Have a great day. Always important to define exactly what we're talking about on this program. We appreciate your call, Steve. And of course, we invite more folks to get in touch this hour, 800-471-9264. You can always email, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. I want to get to farmland prices while we're talking about margins, and it seems like the story of really the last few years has been the skyrocketing prices per acre in some cases of farmland. And I want to put it to you all first, John Metzger and Kevin Ousley. What have you seen in your counties? I mean, has this kind of overall trend of upward price movements held in northeastern Indiana as well? And John Metzger, maybe we can start with you.
It certainly has. I mean, when you have, it's like any other commodity, when your corn prices, bean prices go up, it's going to make what the land worth more. And yeah, we've had some phenomenal prices. Some of it's been slow raised, but everything's going up, mm-hmm. from land rents to actual value of the ground. Wow. So that, I mean, I think that's just a natural trend for when you have crop prices like they are.
Kevin Ousley, same story in Whitley County?
Yes.
Yeah.
This might be the municipal government reporter in me, but I just feel the need to point out that's put a lot of pressure on property taxes on mm-hmm. ag. There's huge pressure to increase those, and just mm-hmm. there's huge political pressure on the other side not to do that. So you guys are kind of in the middle.
And Chris Hurt, I want to bring you in here as well. I mean, it seems like can you give us a little bit of maybe the scope of this price increase, even just in the last, say 5 years? I mean, in this part of the state, I mean, we're hearing prices in some cases over, what, $10,000 per acre for the best land?
Sure. And again, I'll quote some data that's average data for the state of Indiana. When we say average, we're basically looking at across the whole state. In 2005, we were about $2,900 an acre for farmland, and this year we're doing a survey here in June at Purdue University, so we don't have that result right now, but we think we're going to be on average about $7,500 an acre. So that is, just running my calculator here, that's an increase of 160% since 2005. So clearly, as the producers well know, the higher returns for crop production have really ended up in land values. And the second thing that we have been characterized in this period from 2005 up until the fairly recent time period has been declining interest rates. And certainly all of your listeners know if they've tried to put money in a savings account or a money market account, in recent years those interest rates that they can receive are down near 0%. And as we look at borrowing cost for land, those have been low by historical standards. They're clearly not down to 0%, but we've seen very low interest rates. And so what that does, it compounds the higher returns, obviously would tend to give us higher land values, but then when the financing cost to buy land is low, that also helps stimulate land values. So we've been in a very unique time period where interest rates have been stimulating land values higher and returns to farming have been stimulating land values higher. Again, I'm in the outlook business thinking about the future, and at least we're waving the red flag that if we could get back to normal production in the United States, which again, this year we may not be able to get back there, but if we could, we really think we're going to see declining returns and that we're going to be in an environment over the next 3 to 5 years of overall increasing interest rates. So we're trying to at least wave the red flag of caution. We've come a long way on these land values, that the future may not be as supportive. It's not to say we'd see a collapse, but perhaps more of a leveling off in these land values at much higher levels.
Well, let me. You've kind of headed toward where I wanted to get to here as well, and maybe let's put a finer point on it, because due to the factors that that you all have mentioned, there has been speculation really for a few years now. It seems like that there may be a bit of a bubble between, you know, cheap borrowing costs and, of course, returns, that there may also be an element of speculation in all this. Is that your conjecture as well, that maybe the market's a bit overheated?
Well, time always tells on asset bubbles, and they're hard to get the timing right. But, again, if we look at the years 2010, 11, and 12, given the very low interest rates, land values near 10, 11, even 12,000 are not unreasonable, but if two things happen, if returns are expected to be as high as they were in those years, and if interest rates stay as low. I think that's what we're saying, is that don't expect returns to stay at that high of level and interest rates that cheap. So I think this, you know, suggest to us that we're going to have more caution going forward, or certainly the possibility of more caution, and maybe even a little more willingness if these interest rates come up. Remember, families have been interested in selling farmland in the last few years, but when the family looks at the returns they get, very good, when they pay their income taxes, state and federal income tax, what do they do with the money they have left over? There's very small returns for many of the things like CDs. So what they have ended up saying is, let's just keep it in farmland. We can get 3.5% return a year's cash rent. So I think that's what we could see also change. If you bring up these interest rates and that family has some alternative places to invest some of the proceeds of farmland, you're going to increase the supply for sale in the market as well. Now, we don't see any major collapse. We have seen periods where we've had booms and bust in land values, but at this point, I think we see more of a plateauing of land values.
We're talking agriculture on this edition of Midday Matters. We hope you'll get in touch at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We need to get to a break in just a few minutes here. First, though, we have a caller on the line. Let's open the phones and go to Brad. Brad, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. I'm so glad that you are having the program that you're having today that's focusing on agriculture. I teach at Manchester University right now, but I grew up on a farm, and I think that sometimes our society does not appreciate the contributions that farmers make to our economy and to our quality of life. And the challenges, the risks that are involved in farming, and the hard decisions that farmers need to make. And so I'm glad that you're focusing on agriculture and helping everybody to realize that that's an important part of our economy.
Well, Brad, we appreciate the kind words. Thank you very much.
I think, you know, sometimes people seem to be oblivious to this. Like even, for example, the weathercasters seem to operate out of a perspective that everybody wants sunshine all the time when our fields really need rain. And so I'm glad that you're focusing on agriculture and the work of farmers, and that I hope it will increase many people's appreciation for the importance of farming and agriculture and contributing to our overall quality of life.
We appreciate the call, Brad. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Saw some smiles in the studio here just now. John Metzger, sound about right?
Well, yeah.
Do you feel unappreciated,
well,
John?
Not really. I mean, sadly, it's, the general public is getting farther and farther away from food production and by generation and generation. We've at our farm tried to be a little more focused on not being throwing big tours, but being a little more open with the public and trying to let them understand, because there's a lot out there with everything, and we're just trying to show us what we actually do and why we do it. So
we need to take a quick break on the program here. We hope you'll get in touch with your questions and comments. We're talking ag with Chris Hurt, agricultural economist at Purdue University, Kevin Ousley, president of the Whitley County Farm Bureau, and John Metzger, president of the Noble County Farm Bureau. Call us 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Stay with us. Back in 4 minutes.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, Mitch Hurwitz, creator of the TV series Arrested Development, talks about the show's return after it was canceled 7 years ago by the Fox Network. All 15 episodes of the new season were released on Netflix and feature the original cast, including narrator Ron Howard. An interview with Mitch Hurwitz
on the next
Fresh Air Weekend.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOY News. The Planned Parenthood affiliates in Kentucky and Indiana are merging starting next month. The new nonprofit announced Monday it will be known as Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky and will serve patients at 28 health centers across the two states. Planned Parenthood officials say the merger, effective July 1st, will strengthen services in both states and ensure reproductive health remains accessible and affordable. All 28 centers will offer preventative health care services, such as a pap test, breast exams, birth control, and pregnancy tests. Mergers have been common within Planned Parenthood. At one time, the national organization had more than 200 affiliates, and now there are 73 nationwide. The announcement was made in Louisville on Monday morning. The combined affiliate will have 190 employees. Indiana State School Superintendent is expected to discuss her next steps in reviewing results from the I-STEP exam after computer troubles disrupted test-taking by thousands of students across the state this spring. Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz has scheduled a Monday news conference at the State House to talk about the I-STEP review process. A Department of Education spokesman said 2 weeks ago that the agency was working to find an independent evaluator to assess the test validity. Test contractor CTB McGraw-Hill has said the problems would likely delay results until July. Problems with the online format affected roughly 70,000 tests, and some school administrators want the results ruled invalid. School officials reported that computer screens froze, and many students were forced to log back in repeatedly while taking the test. The Fort Wayne Tin Caps have their longest winning streak of the season at 7. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the weekend results.
The Dayton Dragons came to Parkview Field Saturday night for a 3-game series. They stretched the Tin Caps to 12 innings Saturday before Malik Smith got a bunt single, was sacrificed a second by Albert Martinez, and scored on Max Tissenbaum's single for a 12-inning, 1-0 Tin Caps win. Sunday afternoon, Dayton scored a run in the 8th inning and took a 3-2 lead. In the Fort Wayne 8th, the Tin Caps had runners on 2nd and 3rd with no outs, but the next two batters struck out. Then a walk loaded the bases for Diego Gorriz, who lined a shot at the Dayton shortstop, who misplayed the ball. Fort Wayne came back for a 4-3 lead, one more run, and the Tin Caps had a 5-3 win, their 7th consecutive victory. The Dayton series ends tonight at Parkview Field, 7:05. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
And a new Indiana law that allows some criminal records to be expunged from public background checks could open up job opportunities for thousands of rehabilitated ex-offenders. The law takes effect July 1st and marks the first time Indiana has allowed crimes such as drunken driving and drug dealing to be erased by the courts. The goal is to remove the crimes from public background check engines used by employers so that the offense does not prevent a rehabilitated ex-offender from finding a job. Police officers would still be able to view the person's criminal record. Those petitioning the court to have their records expunged would have to show they've stayed out of trouble. Most of the crimes that could be expunged are nonviolent. And there's some wet weather in the forecast this afternoon. We have a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, and we'll see a high of 76. Overnight, there's a slight chance of showers before 2 a.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies with a low of 61. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI and online at nipr.fm.
It's Midday Matters on WBOI, a quarter till 1 o'clock. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday, June 10th. I'm Sean Beter. Along with me in studio, Dan Stockman from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. And with us as well for this hour about agriculture in our region, Chris Hurt, by phone, agricultural economist at Purdue University, Kevin Ousley, president of the Whitley County Farm Bureau, and John Metzger, president of the Noble County Farm Bureau. And of course, we want to hear from you this hour. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Our regular co-host actually sent in a question for us. He just can't stay away, Bob.
He's like a wart. He's just tough to get rid of. God love him.
Bob Kaler wanted to know what's the group's impression of the long-term prospects for ethanol and soy diesel? Would any market for them exist without the producer credits and mixing mandates? Professor, we can start with you on this. What's the outlook for those renewable fuels that we've have been such a big part of our economy the last few years?
Well, first, the subsidy that ethanol had received, that has expired, and also there was a import restriction or tariff that was in place that has expired as well. So the foundation of the ethanol program is a mandate, and that mandates from Congress. It is the law of the United States that we use so many gallons of ethanol each year. And actually, there are a number of categories of different biofuels. The last legislation was passed in December of 2007 and was extremely aggressive, moving to 15 billion gallons of corn ethanol by 2015, and then a total of 36 billion gallons of total biofuels from primarily plant material by 2022. Now, we've largely met the objectives of the corn ethanol, but we have run into a problem, and we call it the blend wall, and that is that retailers are primarily selling 10% blend ethanol, so E10 or 10% ethanol, 90% gasoline.
And for folks who may not have noticed at the pump, I mean, this is in, well, everybody's gas tank nowadays. There's at least a little bit of ethanol mixed in with the gasoline that you pump every day.
Right, and unfortunately in the law, there was no requirement that the exact blend of ethanol has to be posted. But I think here in the Midwest, you can almost be assured when you buy gasoline, you're getting E10, 10% blended with ethanol. Our problem with the blend wall is that we can't sell more than about 13.5 billion gallons of ethanol in the United States. We're going to struggle to get to that 15 billion because retailers do not want to go beyond E10. This gets a little complicated, but the EPA has approved going to E15 for vehicles that are 2001 and newer. But retailers are unwilling to put in another set of pumps, one that would have E10 for vehicles that are prior to 2001, another set of E15 that's for vehicles 2001 and newer. And, of course, small motors can't take E15 either. So right now we're kind of stuck, and we don't know how this is going to be resolved. And so I think some uncertainty of whether we're going to continue to grow. And I think my best view at this point is to say we're, again, probably going to level off the use for corn for ethanol and maybe see some growth on soy diesel.
And the law specifies corn, so does that kind of take away the incentive to look at things like switchgrass and some of the other things have been looked at?
This was in what we thought, according to what Congress passed, was a mandate for what's called cellulosic ethanol, cellulosic meaning from plant material. And that was to really start growing about this time, 12 and 13. And in 13, we're supposed to be up to 1 billion gallons. And then that was going to move to 16 billion, from 1 billion this year to 16 billion by 2022. There is practically no production, just a tiny little bit at some pilot plants. So cellulose has not developed, and there will have to be some decision made about what is done with cellulose. EPA can waive that and just say, well, it's not being produced, so we're not going to require it. Congress could come in and change the law, or Congress could say, we want it to be enforced, and then the blenders that buy ethanol will have to pay penalties because they can't get something. It's required that they buy it. Well, they can't get it. They have to pay the penalty because they didn't get it. Oil companies would be very upset about that.
We want to hear from our listeners today. You can always call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Kevin Ousley, before we go to break, can you give us a little bit of the producer's perspective on the impact of the ethanol mandates on folks growing corn?
It has increased the prices over the past couple of years. One thing I would like to point out to listeners is that the whole kernel is not actually used in the ethanol process. There are still distiller grains, and there are still byproducts of the ethanol process that is turned around and fed to cattle and hogs and chickens. So the complete kernel of corn is not actually lost to the ethanol process. There is the byproducts. So
We need to take just a quick break here. We'll wrap up the discussion when we return. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, Mitch Hurwitz, creator of the TV series Arrested Development, talks about the show's return after it was canceled 7 years ago by the Fox Network. All 15 episodes of the new season were released on Netflix and feature the original cast, including narrator Ron Howard. An interview with Mitch Hurwitz
on the next
Fresh Air Weekend.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Singer-songwriter Jason Isbell has gone through some big life changes lately. He's newly married and newly sober.
I'd done one other show sober that I could recall in 10 years. It was terrifying.
But those were different days.
The music of Jason Isbell, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Those were different
this afternoon days. At 4 here on WBOI.
Code for America fellows are packers in white hats. As Andrew Hyder explains, they dissect city systems like those that track blighted properties or weather disasters to figure out what can be done more cheaply and easily.
And then you put it back together in this new form that it's helped everyone out. You've left it better than you found it.
I'm Neil Conan, Hackers Helping Cities Out. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Seven minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, this is Midday Matters on WBOY. I'm Sean Beter, along with Dan Stockman from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and we're talking agriculture on this edition of our program. With us in studio, Kevin Ousley, president of the Whitley County Farm Bureau, John Metzger, president of the Noble County Farm Bureau, and with us by phone, Chris Hurt, agricultural economist at Purdue University. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do. It's 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at middaymatters. It looks like we have a caller on the line, so let's open the phones and go to Rex. Rex, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Blue-green algae is caused by phosphorus and lawn and farm fertilizer. Farmers also historically drained the swamp areas of their farms. Swamps and billabongs are sponges in watershed systems, but it ends up in the oceans. My comment is on the blue-green algae blooms around here, which you couldn't swim in Grant Lake last year because of blue-green algae.
Let's put that to our panelists here and John Metzger. I mean, your thoughts on Rex's concern?
Well, we're all concerned. I mean, he's a livestock operation. We use a lot of water, and we can try to conserve as much water, and we try to protect our waterways. Personally, on my farm, we've planted waterways or buffer strips. Actually, with our organic fertilizer, as I like to call it, we knife it in. We do as good a job as possible, and we're always looking for better ways, but to keep the environment clean. I mean, the farmer has always been the steward of the soils, and I think sometimes, a lot of times, people don't realize the things we do to keep phosphorus and stuff out of the water.
Well, so, and anything that leaves your field is wasted, and you don't have a lot to waste.
No, we don't.
I mean, you can't afford to.
It's great that everybody's looking in and trying to keep track of the water and keep the water clean. We all want clean water. I mean, as a kid, we all swam in the lakes, and we still go into the rivers and stuff. So I applaud anybody who wants to keep the rivers, but we also got to use some common sense in what we do. So,
Rex, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Just a few minutes left in the program here, and Kevin Ousley, if you'd like, I'd like to give you a chance to respond to Rex as well. I mean, certainly, especially smaller farms, I mean, need to keep the land relatively safe for their crops, for their families, for their animals.
And we're not putting more fertilizer on the field than what we want to, because that's just expensive and doesn't make sense to us as individuals and farmers. We want to try to do the best that we can at what we're doing and keep the fertilizer costs as low as we can to produce the amount of corn or soybeans that we can. So
I want to, we touched on it a little bit earlier in the program, and I want to put it out there more directly again. Very briefly, each of you, and Chris Hurt, maybe we'll start with you, your forecast one more time for the state's farmers this year. Another good year, or is this a wait-and-see point in time?
Well, obviously, wait and see. Weather is still very, very important. But I think right now our overall prospects are a little bit better on the crop side than the nation in total. That means it looks like we could have reasonably close to normal production this year with somewhat stronger prices, and that says a pretty good year overall. I think the other great thing we're looking at is if we can see corn come back in the $5 to $6 range, the livestock industry, I think, will return to at least break even or maybe a little bit of profitability. So if we can get both the crop producers making a little money and the livestock, I think that's a very good place to be.
Let's put it to you, John Metzger. What are you hoping for as the year goes on here? Certainly, lower feed prices would do your operation well.
Well, it would help my operation, but we grow a lot of our feed, so it's kind of a catch 22. I mean, for the majority or for a lot of the farmers in Noble County, this looks like it could be a good year with decent crops and higher prices than. As we talked about before, if the nation has record crops, then the price is going to be down. So it looks like it should be weather, depending on the weather. It shouldn't be too bad of a year for everyone.
And Kevin Ousley, final words for this hour. How about Whitley County? Things looking mostly okay so far this year.
Mostly okay. Still got to be scared of July and August, how hot it gets and how dry it gets. But right now, the crops look good.
Any thoughts on a long-term forecast? Any evidence, I guess, that we may be in for another very warm, very dry summer?
I can't forecast that. I wish I could. If I could, I'd be a lot richer than what I am. But yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time for this edition of Midday Matters, but I'd like to thank all of our guests this hour. Of course, Dan Stockman, thanks for sitting in with us once again.
Always a pleasure.
Chris Hurt, agricultural economist at Purdue University. We appreciate your time as well.
Well, my pleasure.
And a big thanks to the other folks in the studio. Of course, Kevin Ousley, president of the Whitley County Farm Bureau, and John Metzger, president of the Noble County Farm Bureau. We appreciate you guys taking time out for us as well.
Thank you for having us.
I'm Sean Beter, and you're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1 and online at NIPR.FM. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester. Stay with us. Fresh Air with your host, Terry Gross, is coming up next. It's 1 o'clock.